Blog Talk Radio.
From experience, and I'm also speaking from being able to tell you that it's a risk.
Everybody has to have a core. There's something that drives them. There's something that is bigger than ourselves.
Are you kidding me? Did you really just come at me like that? You will be eliminating the people that just don't have no business coming in your direction in the first place by the way you carry yourself, the way that you speak, and everything like that. So all you're doing is eliminating and inviting the correct people in your life.
No, we want to hear the deal.
Where do y'all want to go with this? You're talking children, you're talking relationships, you're talking all kinds of things, and it blows my mind, man.
Walk you off. Said you would never make it. What did he see? arms around me.
Get on.
Can I tell y'all one more thing? I just need to tell you one more thing. See, he's mine, and I am his. It doesn't matter what I feel. He only sees me for who I am. Does anybody know that tonight? Oh, see, he is mine, and I am his. Said it doesn't matter what I did. See, he only sees me.
Good evening, everybody. The Man Up Show is on the air. The Man Up Show is on the air.
Yes, yes.
Everybody, this is Big D Dow Harrington tonight. How's everybody doing tonight?
Wonderful.
Wonderful, brother. So
blessed. Online, I know Mr. Naz is on the line. Naz, you out here?
I'm good, man. You start up the show right for me, man. I need that. I think so.
All right. I know that Mr. Edward L. Fairley is on the line, Eddie.
I'm here. What's good?
What's good, baby?
That's what I'm talking about. Right now, other brother, Mr. Hassan Black, is on the way, so we'll be hearing Haas relatively soon. Gentlemen, tonight our topic is based upon first last week. Did we just have a good show or what?
Yes, we did.
Man.
Yes, we did. Man.
I'm speechless, man. That's a good thing.
Brothers, we went in on the travesty of this Trayvon Martin thing. And may I say, since this episode has aired, it has done nothing but build positive momentum for our Man Up movement. So I'd like to thank everybody who has contributed to last week's success and building forward. That's Tom Reynolds from the Montclair NAACP. That's the Lacey Davis.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
You know, that's Pastor Fernando Hughes of the Bethel Baptist Church of Orange, New Jersey. Thank you so much. We thank Sid. We thank Brent Osborne. We thank everybody that contributed to last week's show's success. We reached a lot of people. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback. It's the beginning, not the end. Naz, how's your week been? Any updates, anything new you want to make everybody abreast of?
I gotta kind of agree the same sentiment that you're saying. I am very humbled and thankful that all the support that we have been getting, as far as the Man Up Movement and Man Up Talk Show. People are highly impressed with what we're doing. The brother that's on the panel, you, my brother Eddie, brother Hassan, and this support that we're getting from you know, key people in our community through East Coast, West Coast, and Southern region and Midwest. You know, I'm very humbled by that. I'm also happy the support that we're getting, you know, on our other stations. Big shout out to Sister Raven. You know, we're getting a lot of love, but like, you know, like we said last week, I'm not content, you know, because we have some success. So I think at this point, and I think, Brother Eddie, we talked about it before, we don't raise the bar. You know, that's what it is. And sometimes God put us in certain places to do certain things, and I'm just very excited and ready. I'm ready to take, you know, the next level.
Absolutely, absolutely. Edward, how's your week been?
Busy, man. Looking for sleep as usual, never finding it. but it's always a productive move. Matter of fact, right after this, I have to head on to work. And then after I get off of work, I got to go straight to the church to pick up the boys that I mentor. We're doing a missions trip in D.C., feeding the homeless, as well looking at some sites. And then we're going to head back here and get back. That'll get me back around 9 o'clock in the evening, and I got to go straight back to work and to get off at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'm going to try to find some energy, maybe close my eyes a little bit on the van headed to D.C., and headed back. But it's going to be a productive yet good weekend, just like everything else that I'm doing. And NASA, they wanted to launch and get things moving quickly, so I will actually start the whole training with NASA at Wednesday, as opposed to mid next month. They bumped it up, and I'll start doing the training with NASA on Wednesday. The convocation that I kicked off last week went well. People are still talking about it, still buying books. People waiting for the DVD to come out, and they said they've been really, really inspired and impacted by the message that I shared with them on last Thursday. That's pretty much it for right now.
Brother, that's exactly what we're talking about here. A lot of positive things, a lot of positive movements. Before we get on to tonight's topic, which today's topic is stop playing the victim. Sometimes things happen in our lives that God puts things in our lives for us to overcome, for us to be able to adapt in order to give him the honor, to be able to give him the glory. We just have to learn how to take what we've got. If we got some lemons, we need to get some water, some sugar, and make some lemonade and keep it moving. But we have a tendency to blame the white man, blame this man, blame that thing. We ain't got, the blame game is done. It's over. It's overkill. It's time for us to get the business. So, you know, we need to stop playing the victim. That's the topic of tonight's show. On tonight, you know, we have our brother, Tom Reynolds. He's the president of the Montclair NAACP. He's here. He's going to join us in a little bit. So, you know, like I said, I had the honor the other night to be on with Tom and join him and the caucus of the Montclair NAACP. We shared some things, some thoughts, and some ideas. I'll let Tom get into that after we come back from a break. And it is the honor for me to say that tonight we have Pastor John W. Rice, Jr. He is the pastor at Love Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church of Orange, New Jersey. He's also the author of a great book, From the Corner to the Cornerstone. This brother is a very dynamic brother. He is the president, CEO of Horizon Community Development, founder of New Jersey Works television program, as well as a consultant to the New Jersey Network News. He and the labor and workforce development of the state of New Jersey. Reverend Rice is a dynamic brother, and when we come back from this next break, Brother Rice, Brother Reynolds is going to come and join with us, and we're going to chop up this issue. We have Sig, we have others on, so we got a very full show for you tonight. So we're going to do this as soon as we come back from a quick musical interlude, and then we're going right straight to the topic, y'all. Mm-hmm.
Congressmen, tell them to replace Section 4, and when we replace it, that we add that we need to add some of those states like Pennsylvania and Arizona that have been proved themselves to be having racist tendencies in their voting rights issues.
Absolutely. That's absolutely wonderful. Also on the line is Pastor John Rice, who I also failed to mention is also the Oranges and Maplewood NAACP Religious Affairs Leader. Pastor Rice, are you online, sir?
Yes, I am, and I'm excited to be here and to speak on this topic.
Go on, Pastor Rice.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here on this panel. I had a chance to talk to Renanda Hughes, pastor of the Bethel Baptist Church, on yesterday, a good friend of mine, and we kind of spoke about the positiveness of the show, and the fact that it's a show that must go on, and that we have to support, and that we have to, from the pulpit, encourage people to tune in.
Wow.
And we had a good conversation yesterday. Yeah.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen. Like I said, I gave a brief introduction of the topic. It's to stop playing the victim. Eddie, would you like to further set the table for everybody?
Oh man, I personally think this transpired because Nas and I we were speaking briefly off air a few days ago or several days ago in regards to the discussion last weekend. We definitely realized that or concluded that a lot of people are where they're at, where they are, because they won't accept responsibility for where they are. We also concluded that a lot of people are making excuses about our culture, our race, and even other people where they are because they won't allow them to take responsibility for where they are. And until we decide or realize that we determine our fate, we determine who we are, and that our decisions causes what we have going on, it's not until then that we will be able to make change. Because if you play the victim or due to someone else's actions, you'll never be able to fix it, because it's not going to be until that other person takes an action for you to be relieved of whatever it is that you're claiming to be the victim of. So if you take the responsibility, then you take back the power to be able to relieve yourself of whatever the condition that you are in. But until you do that and you continue to allow others to dictate your situation or your circumstance, you will never be able to relieve yourself of the bondage that you have allowed yourself to be in.
Absolutely. That's true. So, Naz, okay, so you and Ed had this conversation. What did you take from your conversation with Eddie as it pertains to this topic, in which, you know, brought about tonight's episode?
I think Ed, you know, Brother Eddie has explained it very well and straight to the point. I mean, it's just to a point that we as men, I'm speaking from a male's perspective, a black male, that we have to take accountability in our actions. We can't keep on looking to point the finger to, well, I'm not getting this job because this has happened to me. You know, things happen in our circumstances, in our lives, but we have to understand, you know what, we can't control what other people do. We have to control what we do. We have to take accountability for our actions. You know, if you're not seeing your child, do something about it. If you're not making the money that you want to make, you do what you have to do to put yourself in a better situation. So, I mean, you know, basically it came down to the point that, you know what, let's stop the crying. Let's stop doing what we have to do. Things will happen. You take that punch on the chin, you test it off, you get back into that fight. But you know what? You just can't give up. You just can't give up the fight. You can't just throw the white towel in. So I think it's a very strong topic, and I think Brother Eddie has said it very well. And, you know, gentlemen, you know my take on it, Brother Dow and Brother Eddie. You know, I'm with the fight. I'm with the fight. As long as it's for a positive fight, I'm all in.
Absolutely.
Man, I agree with that.
Basically, Darryl, man, when I'm out, when I mentor, whether it's an adult, my students, or the young males that I mentor, I'm not fighting fighting for them to see that there's problems. I'm fighting for their minds. I'm fighting for the, to teach them how to think on their own. If they feel that there's no jobs out there, I might teach them or have them consider the fact that they can create a job. If someone's keeping them from being able to advertise their company, I might teach them or consider an opportunity to create some kind of advertisement for themselves. I'm not for excuses. All I see is potential opportunities to build on a circumstance and create some kind of way for someone else who's going through the same problem that you are to help them make it easier for them in the future because you figured it out. But the minute you say that you are the victim or it's because of someone else, it's because I didn't have a father, it's because my mom didn't do this, it's because my mom didn't hug me enough or what have you, when you do that, you take away any opportunity for your mind to create or do anything because you have now pretty much, it's like saying can. The minute you say you can't do something, you know, you don't even begin to think of a possibility of how you can do so. So I take away the word can, and I just probe their minds to give them opportunities to create. That's what, I mean, we are made in the likeness and the image of God. So we are created. We have all of the answers. We are connected to the person or the being with all the answers. So if we deny ourselves the ability or the opportunity to think, then therefore we'll never come up with a solution. But the minute you take the time and you ask yourself questions as opposed to saying, I can't do it, or saying, how can I, that's when you have given your mind or your brain or even your spirit the opportunity to create or think of avenues or ways to do something. But it's just so frustrating to hear people say, well, I can't because of this person, or I can't because of that person, or I can't because just I can't. It just doesn't work. I remember when my daughter was 2 years old, she cried when she was at her uncle's house. And he said, what are you crying for? She said, because I said a bad word. He said, well, what was the bad word? And she said, I say can't. My dad does not allow us to say can't. I don't play that. Because, like I said, the minute you say can't is the minute you relieve yourself of any kind of opportunity to create or think of a way to do. You can always do something, especially with God in your life. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Right.
Let the soap play on, my brother. I'll put it this way. I'm going to chime in on this one, and then I'm going to let everybody else, you know, have at it. Okay. It might not be your fault. You might not have been the one that spilled the milk in the room. But you're standing right there. The mess is right in front of you. Clean it up. It might not be your fault, but it is your problem. A lot of things that happen to us, we have to overcome it. It is an obstacle that is in our way. God is just waiting for you to call on him to help you through it. God's going to call away. He's right there. He understands the situation better than you do. He understood the situation was coming before you even realized you woke up this morning. It is up to you to overcome it. You can do it. I think, Eddie, you said something really, really profound. That, okay, you have abolished the word can't from your vocabulary. Then you will pass that over to your children. What are we passing on to our children? That's a good question. In a lot of instances, it's not necessarily what you say. I could tell you, you could be anything in the world that you want to when you grow up. But if you see me constantly quitting or compromising off of what has been given to me, the gifts that have been given to me, the opportunities that I've had, but there's some adversity in the way, and I'm willing to buckle based upon the adversity, what am I telling my children? Not necessarily verbally, but by my actions. Or any children or any brother who happens to think highly of me or thinks favorably upon me based upon knowing me, well, the barrel can't do it, and I know I can't do it. No. I won't tell you that I can't do it. I'll just tell you I haven't done it yet. Or I just don't choose to do it at this time based upon my schedule, maybe tomorrow. But I agree with Eddie to the extent that, okay, you can't put no limits on the no limit warrior. You can't put a limitation on God. I think Pastor Rice can say it better, but, you know, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. It doesn't say most things. It doesn't say a lot of things. It says all.
Mm-hmm.
That encompasses every possible thing under the sun. But also, in that statement, some people take it for that, yes, I can achieve or I can do all things. But it also is I can withstand all things. There is nothing that can happen to me that I cannot deal with God on my side.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
There is no limit that you can place upon me because you cannot place any limitations on my Father.
That's right.
You might be able to beat me by myself. That ain't that hard. Well, depends on who you ask. But under normal circumstances, that's not that hard. But I know as like the sun rose this morning, it will set tonight, and it's going to rise again tomorrow, that you can't be God. You might be able to beat me, but you won't beat him. And if he says that I'm going to get the victory in this, then you better guarantee it. It's going to happen. It might not happen in the manner me or you think it's going to happen. Victory might not look the way that it's supposed to look, but victory will come. So we can't put limits on something that we don't have any power over anyway. We don't have any power over what we do or what we don't do. We believe that we do. We have been lulled scientifically with our intellect even to believe that we can do or we will do based upon our will. It's based upon our faith, not behind our will. It's behind what we believe in and the fact of who we believe in that will carry us through. Whether one believes it or not. Now, there are some who are atheists, there are some who are not believers, who feel that, you know, it's, you know, they made themselves who they are. You know, and that's for them to come to that conclusion. But it also says, like Pastor can say it even better, that, you know, every knee shall bow, not most, not some, but every. Every tongue shall confess, not a lot, not most, but all. Who Jesus Christ actually is. Not my opinion. I know I've read it somewhere before. So.
That's right.
Me and Eddie are getting off our soapboxes. If you could lighten us more, I would love it because me and Eddie have talked enough. So.
That's right. This is Pastor Rice. How you doing? I just wanted to chime in because I had been voted in as the criminal justice advocate for the Oranges NAACP, not Religious Affairs.
One of the reasons
why that position voted me in was that I'm also CEO of Horizons Community Development, which is an IOP licensed by New Jersey Division of Mental Health and Addiction Services, whereby we deal with probation and parole, guys who have lost their way in the system, guys who have been in jail, mostly males that we deal with through drug court or ISP. And one of the things that we have found through our years being as a licensed provider as an intensive outpatient facility is that a lot of the guys, when they come out, all they know is drugs. All they know is how to sell drugs, use drugs. Their mama sold drugs, their daddy sold drugs. Most of them don't even know their father. Almost 85% of them can't even talk about their father. And their mother is just recently getting off of drugs or on drugs, babies having babies, and the saga goes on. Also, most of them have dropped out of school by the 11th grade. Get through the HESPA test up until about the 10th or 11th grade, and then the schools are forced to fail you. And so we have set up programs and we have set up counseling sessions where we use these entrepreneurial skills, if you will, for these guys that have been peddling drugs. They have some entrepreneurial skills and how they can change this negative into a positive. And we've had great results, like an ISP, Intensive Supervision Program, which is a judiciary prison like drug court where they're sanctioned to this probation or parole for 18 months to 2 years, we found out that we can get almost 85% to 90% of them jobs, but we have to put some stipulations. We can't accept the blame game. We can't accept the shame and doubt that comes with blaming. You got to reinvent yourself. And if that means working at McDonald's, that means sweeping floors, that means waiting down on Halsey Street to get day jobs. Mm-hmm. When you have a parole officer or a PO over you saying that in 90 days, if you don't get a job, you're going back to prison, it's amazing how many get jobs. It's amazing how that they just get themselves brainwashed. And the group becomes the positive energy. And then if you're fortunate, you can bring to them Christ. You can bring to them God and Jesus, and you can bring to them. And we were all called to, especially all preachers, were called to this mandate of Luke 4:18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because He has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captive and to recover the sight to the blind, to set liberty to them who have been bruised in the NIV, have been in prison. And so we are called to do these things. So many times that part of the ministry is looked upon the churches as negative. So we have been blessed that we have received funds from the state of New Jersey where we can go out into four counties presently now who are using the formula that we use, church and clinical, because some of the brothers need some help. Some of them need some co-occurring disabilities. Some of them need some psychological situations. Of course, it's mandated that they have to read my book because it tells them my story. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, I have a story. I was privileged. I had two great parents, brought me up in church, but I fell victim to drugs. Mm-hmm. I fell victim to getting locked up a bunch of times. And through faith, through just a little glimpse of hope, and being introduced to Christ Jesus early in my life, I had something to fall back on. But then I was able to look upon some of my brothers that have never been introduced at all to church or to ministry. And they needed mentoring. And lo and behold, you know, as we called out to the churches would come. And the churches would bring clothes and white pressed shirts and Brooks Brothers suits and good shoes and things that they could do to go on interviews. And so we role play interview, and we do life skills, and we do job readiness, and we depend on not people that are looking to get paid, but people that are looking to volunteer.
That's right.
People looking
That's right.
to give back freely what was so freely given to them. You know, we don't look upon how we grew up the right way, but we've been blessed, you know, to be introduced to Christ at an early age. You know, we've been privileged that somebody dragged us to Sunday school. And so we have to give back. And so I think that the next revolution will be started in the church. And it will be to help those that are in prison get themselves back together, accepted in the community. Because, you know, it's a shame when the only one to take you back in the house is your grandmother. And your grandmother's going to let you sleep on the couch in the basement. It's a shame when you're 30, 35 years old, and the only place you can go is to the basement of your grandmother's house. So there's a lot of building up, strengthening that really only comes from the gospel. You got to have faith. But some of our greatest men in the history of this country have had those same trials and tribulations, have fell to drugs. Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, you know. They fell from the streets and they picked themselves up and they got back up.
That's right.
And so, you know, it's a shame not to get back up. You can fall, but it's a shame not to get back up. And that's, you know, that's the message that we give to them. and we try our best to handhold them, to mentor them, to walk them through the system. It's a shame sometimes when you see a black man with a degree who has to sit in the welfare line to get some food stamps or to get whatever he needs to get himself back, like health insurance and life insurance and things that, a lot of our black men have to be taught all over again. But, you know, if you stay with them, if you hold their hand, if we have positive role models that we find abundantly in the church, by them giving back and them saying, look, you can do it because I did it. But they got to open up. They got to tell their story. Mm-hmm. So many of us don't tell our story. That's why I wrote the book, From the Corner to the Cornerstone. That's why I wrote that book, because so many of us don't tell our story. And I believe that book has saved many lives. And I believe that, you know, if you wanted to get a copy, shameless plug, you get them from Jesus Books, Prince of Peace in South Orange, or Crossroads right there in Hillside on Maplewood Avenue.
Amen.
Thank you for letting me share.
There's a lot of things in there that that he said, man, that are key in the road to recovery or road out of being a victim. And one is definitely a support group. I can't allow that to just be pushed under the road under the rug. You definitely need a support group, people who are like-minded, who are trying to either get where you are headed or are where you're trying to go. Because to go back to your old groups or the old select posse that you hung out with is not going to do anything but steer you the wrong direction. It's imperative that you remain in those support groups until you can get to the point where you can support yourself. And even then, you still need a support group.
That's right.
He also said something that I hope churches and preachers and pastors are listening to. He said that they give and they do stuff in the community, and then they potentially introduce the gospel. That's how it should be done. We do it backwards for the most part. And if studies have shown that most people come to Christ through relationship, not because they just came into church. It's through relationship with someone else. So if you build a relationship and show the trust, and then, oh, by the way, I'm a Christian, it's like, wow, you didn't try to force the Bible. You did it through your works. You showed that you are in Christ. And that is what brings people to Christ, by the relationships that you build prior to them finding out or realizing, if you will, that you are a Christian. That's how you save souls. That's how you bring people. Matter of fact, that's why the Nation of Islam is so successful. And I'm just keeping it real. They're meeting people in the jails, like you're doing, brother, which is great. They're meeting them in the jails at the lowest point, and they're building them up. Why wouldn't I want to be a part of something like that? Yeah. I mean, that's just being honest. Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I consider that once I leave? We have to adopt that. And I also like the fact that you, as a pastor and a Christian, you brought up Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, and stuff like that to show that it's not just Christians that are doing great things, and we can collaborate and build up a people. What you believe is what you believe, but I know what I'm going to share with you in hopes that you realize the truth.
That's right.
So those things are so important, and it's also great that you share your story. That's why I'm an advocate of sharing your story. And if it wasn't for you sharing your story, you might have missed out on a lot of people that could relate to your story that you pulled out from where they are. And that's the whole point of your testimony. And I personally don't think that you went to drugs by mistake. It was you that was able or strong enough to make it through that situation so that you could pull other people out of it. It's all in how we look at our situations or our experiences, which is the whole point of this show, being the victim. It's our perspective that provides us or gives us the strength to make it through whatever situations that we're in. And I'm done, fellas. I'm done.
Right.
I'll let y'all go ahead, man, because like I said, I could go all day on stuff like this.
Yeah. And, you know, Eddie, I was so surprised that you You know, I have three adult kids now, my youngest being 20 years old, at William-Patterson University. And one of the things that I always put on them when they were young is they couldn't use the word camp.
Yeah.
And they would have to sit in time out for using the word camp.
No, that's right.
Because I knew that much, you know, and that's why overcoming the obstacle, I had to just start preaching to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I can't use that word can't, that I can't
that's
overcome
right.
this, that I can't reinvent myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what we talk to the men about so often is that, you know, you are probably the strongest entrepreneur in our community.
You're right about that.
Yeah. But when I tell them things like landscape, gutter cleaning, painting houses. You know, one of the things that I did when I first came home and got myself together was that I went on Meeker Street. I'll never forget it. And I saw some Hispanic guys giving this lady a quote on painting a house. And I didn't know much about painting a house. I know I could do anything through Christ who strengthens me if I just had the will to do it.
That's right.
But she told me that she had a three-family small house on Meeker. Right by Passion Avenue School, and they gave her a price of $5,500.
Hmm.
And I said, I can go back to a lot of my customers, former customers, that were working in the field, that were coming by with their tools, that would sell their tools for a bag. And I said, let me go back to them and say, you know what? Why don't we do this house? We did one house. We ended up being on that block for almost 6 months. We did almost 14 houses on that block. And thus came Rice 3 Construction. You know, so the positiveness of, you know, I can, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's a strong word, I can.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, and then you can drip the faith on them. You know, then
mm-hmm.
you can drip a little Jesus on them.
And they'll be receptive to it then.
Man, my whole deacon board got a story. They got a story,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they're equipped for the ministry that we have, that God has planted on us. It's not the most attractive, you know. We're not breaking the doors down on Sundays, and we don't have the largest congregation in the state of New Jersey. But we're recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And the positive work that we do keeps us so busy 7 days a week that if you put those numbers together on Sunday, we would be a large church.
Mm-hmm.
And it has afforded my wife and I the opportunity to do God's will and be compensated. And so, you know, if it's true ministry, God will compensate you.
That's right.
Amen.
That's
right. And keep you in the vineyard doing what, you know, what thus the call was. And, you know, our call is not the most glamorous. I mean, you'll see me on any street on any given day, you know, with my wife, you know, in the corners, in the trenches, and taking people to detox. That's what we started out doing, just taking people to detox. And, you know, and the ministry grew and it grew and it grew, and I don't want to take all the time, but, you know, I'm not alone. There's a bunch of preachers on the line. I thought I was the only one, but it's a whole lot of preachers on this line.
That's good.
Amen. Amen.
Well, we have a couple of callers online that, you know, we want to be able to get to. We have, you know, another hour left to go. The first hour has like blazed by. We've gone through.
Wow.
I apologize.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I enjoyed it, gentlemen. That's good.
You know, time flies when we're having fun. Time is flying. So we're going to do, like, I mean, a quick musical interlude, and then we're going to go strong for the next 45 minutes or so. So, you know, just hang on, relax, you know, go get yourself a quick beverage or something. But we'll be back But before we go, we want to give our telephone number out. The telephone number is 646-478-4507. That's 646-478-4507. Come join the conversation with us. Hit us up on Twitter at Make It Up Show. That's on Twitter, or just, you know, or use a Facebook page, or once again, just give us a call. Once again, 646-478-4507. This is the Man Up Show. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going in. We have James. We have Sig online. We're about to introduce them and bring them on into the conversation. So just hold on, and we'll be right back.
Yeah, we'll be right. Let's go.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Better if we just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out. They do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Yes, yes, we are back.
Yes, we are back. We are back from that musical interlude. And like I said, tonight's topic is stop playing the victim. People, we're above this. We can get by this. You know, no matter what obstacles in our way, we need to stop playing the victim. The telephone number is 646-478-4507. Once again, it's me, Big D, Dal Harrington, one of your co-hosts. Online still, Mr. Naz. Naz, you online, bro?
I'm here, brother. I'm just feeling really good right now.
I'm talking about the one and only Mr. Edward L. Fairley. Eddie, you online?
Man, you know I ain't going nowhere.
That's what I'm talking about. Our other brother from a different mother, Mr. Hassan Black, has text saying, you know, he's at work, he's digging the vibe, he is trying to get online before we say nighty night. So, you know, you go ahead and make that cheddar, brother. Make the cheddar. So, you know, we'll hold it down. We'll see you come around.
You can do it. You got to do
it. We gonna hold it down till you come around. Now, also online is our other brother, Mr. Tom Reynolds with the Montclair NAACP. Tom, you still with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, right. Sir. On, yeah. Definitely can hear you. Definitely can hear you. Definitely can hear you. Also, our esteemed special guest this evening is Pastor John Rice. Pastor Rice, you still with us, my brother?
I'm still here.
All right, brother.
Now, also online is our, it seems like the first lady of the Man Up Movement. Sig, are you online?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
Good evening, sister. How you doing?
Good. Good.
Sig, how are you this evening, sweetie?
Oh, Lord, they dropped a bunch of kids off and left them with me. I don't know. I think the kids won.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
They all under three. I think five of them taller than me.
Oh, Lord. Mutant youth under three. I think that might be like next week, the week after next. We'll definitely think about that one. And also on the line is our other brother, Mr. James Eady. James, are you online?
Oh, I'm here, brother. How are we feeling today?
What's going on, brother?
Hey, Eddie, James is on the line. Anyway.
Good evening, sir. Welcome back, man.
Wonderful. Excellent.
Glad to be here, okay.
All right. Yes, it is. So much love on this show, on the Man Up Show. Like I said, tonight's topic is stop playing the victim. First Sig, then James, share with us what do you feel about what has been shared thus far, and what do you feel? Do you feel that we often play the victim card too much, or is there a rationale behind our feelings of victimization?
No, I think people play the victim card way too much. I've never bought into the victim card. I've never bought into this is what's happening, this is what's keeping me from doing what I do, especially not in this day and age, not in this year that we've arrived at, because by strides we've come so far. We're not completely there yet, but we've come far. I don't allow people to be in my circle or be around me and play the victim. I'm one of those parents you can't use can't. You cannot use it with me. I don't want to hear it. Since my kids were able to talk and say the word no, they've had to come to me with a solution to their problem and make me their last resort. They had to try to fix it for themselves. That's just the way I am. Nothing in life is going to be given to you. You have to work for everything that you get. And it's easy to sit back and say, I had a gentleman tell me, well, I don't have your background, Sig. I didn't do what you did. You think it was easy to be me? I'm a black female. I'm a black dark female. I went through leaps and bounds to get what I got. I worked my butt off to get what I got. And I never played the victim. And every time anybody thought they were going to tell me no, please, I got this. I got your no. We're going to see how quick you can make it a yes for me. And just, you said. Thank you. One more thing. You guys say you share your story. It's not your story that's your sharing. It's your detail. Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of stories have to be the same, but it's the details. It's those details that you're winning souls with. It's those details that's making people realize, hey, that's possible. That's doable. And I thank you guys for share your stories and share your details and reach out and let people know that it's not about what happened before, but it's about what I can do now to get me to where I'm going to go. It's about my future from this point on, regardless of what happened in my past.
Thank you. Go ahead on sing. That's why she's the first lady to share those movements. Always
now,
there with
an come get these kids.
Hold on.
I can come get these kids because I think I lost.
Oh, my God. All right, James, you seem like you're batting cleanup, so let's head back.
Well, basically, a portion of me feels that as a society, we're kind of bred to play the victim, to be 100% honest with you. The way that things are set up and the way our the way we're taught from a young age is, you know, you can do anything you want. Army of one, you know, like anything that happens is kind of not your fault. Like, that's really what I feel the country's been built on, is the ability to blame somebody else. So hence, like, the victim role, like, everyone, honestly, there's always a card to play. Now, if you choose to play that card or not, it's solely up to you. But there, like, the way we've been, like, one of the greatest things I've heard was how we got the Lord's Prayer out of school. And whereas someone think it'd be like, you know, this huge movement just to get it knocked out of school, it was really only one lady that got the Lord's Prayer knocked out of school. And why is because she was uncomfortable with her children doing it. And so with our society being like, hey, everyone's equal, you know, saying on one end, okay, cool, you know, we knock out the Lord's Prayer and that was it. That was the end of it. Why? Because one lady. And she felt as if she were a victim. And one of the things that really stunned me this weekend, this week actually, was hearing the juror from the Trayvon Martin case. Because she's like, oh, well, I'm crying. I'm feeling as bad as Trayvon's mom is and everything else like that. But I kind of think is BS because she lost her child. You didn't lose your child. You can't sit there and say you're feeling as bad as she is. And I can understand how the verdict really messed with her psychologically like that, but whereas she feels as if she has a card to play as a victim because she felt because of the laws and everything else along with it, she couldn't go against the other jurors in the room and give them a hung jury. So when it comes to the victim, as everyone else says, it's your choice whether or not you play it or not, but there's all... But what one of the more frustrating things about society is that there's always some loophole to where somebody say, oh, well, yeah, it's not my fault. And that's one of the things that really upsets me and irritates me pretty much more than anything else, because there's a complete lack of accountability on basically all levels of not just government but within our own ranks. As a culture, as a people, as, you know, just society as a whole, there's always somebody else that you can blame for something. And it's truly sad. It truly, truly is. And I'm working my best to not say, you know what I'm saying? So
you're doing a great job, man.
We're very proud of you.
I'm glad of you. You know I'm proud of you.
But, yeah, it's sad. And the deal is that as children, and one of the things that scares me the most is that children, like, you know, parents, they're always like, oh, it's somebody else, not my child's fault. One of the things, my daughter, because I have a child, I have a daughter, and she's not my daughter by birth. She's not my biological daughter, but I've raised her since she was 5 years old. She's about to be 13 years old. It's crazy. I've raised her for the past 8 years. And when she was younger, she did something. Like, I've always been the disciplinarian. Her mom's not really built for discipline, so I've always been a disciplinarian. And one time, she did something that pissed me off to a point, in order to read the Bible. Just go and read the Bible. Now, she, we had, me and her mother had to work that night. And when she got to her grandmother's house, her grandmother calls me up, pissed, like yelling at me, cursing at me, because she's like, she's too young to start learning, to start doing these things. And I, upset with her, turned around and said, she's too young for what? Let's start learning that there's consequences to your actions. She's too young to start learning that if you're going to do something, you have to be held accountable to, held accountable for it. And that's really where I feel like there's a huge disconnect with the children and the younger generation, and really what like that. I'm sorry. Give me a second. We really don't like think of children as they will eventually be adults. We look at children as children and adults as adults. And that huge disconnect right there is a problem, because you're more willing to let a child get away with something than an adult. But the problem is that that child will eventually become an adult. And one of the things my father always told me is he'd rather beat my ass than have the cops beat my ass. So my apologies, gentlemen, for like completely just brushing a few things to the side. But when it comes to playing and being a victim, it's something that each and every one, like everybody's individual experiences play out, and to where some can feel like they're the victim when me and you looking at them like, there's no reason for you to, like Bill O'Reilly feels like he's a victim. I don't know if you heard that rant that he went on this week. No? Did I lose everybody? Yeah, Bill O'Reilly went on a rant about how it was the disintegration of the African-American family, and how anybody who's standing up, anybody in the NAACP, anybody who's out there marching for Trayvon Martin and marching for equal rights, anybody that's basically trying to come between the structure of the way things is and start bringing some true equality to this country. He basically said that, well, all they're doing is race baiting, and there's really no problem, anything else like that. And if Bill O'Reilly, a very well-to-do, well-off white man, can feel like he is a victim and can feel like he can play the victim card, really, it's open for interpretation to all people. To be 100% true about it. My apologies for going things down.
Just because he can play the victim, we can all play the victim. It doesn't mean that's right. It's not something that we need to support and we need to condone. We it's not something that we should accept. Oh, they're going to play the victim card. Oh, well, that's them. So, yeah, everybody has a right to play the victim. Sure, you can play the victim all day long, but playing the victim gets you where? Nowhere. Wallowing in self-pity, making no accomplishments, standing still, never making any movement.
Which is why I kind of feel it starts from childhood. It's from the moment, like I said the last time I was on the show, and I'm gonna always kick that in, because I mean, I know, I'm pretty sure that everybody on this panel is an amazing parent. Don't get it twisted, but for every one of you guys, there's 50,000 that aren't that great, and no matter how good a parent is, there's always lessons that are lost. But when it starts from the beginning, when you're taught not to play that victim, like you guys say, there's no such thing as the word can't. There's no such thing as I'm not able to. In anybody's vocabulary, that's where it starts. And the more we can knock that message into new and into the younger generations who are having their kids at 15 and really not paying attention to what's going on in the world around them, hence raising children that don't know, that's not paying attention to the world around them, that's really where everything can start to come into a flux. Like, because if we get into the ground level now with a lot of these human lives and everything else like that, and not just, you know, foul anybody who doesn't agree with us and who doesn't believe in what we're saying or what we're doing, then, you know, like, bring everybody in. If you want to come in, just come on in. If you don't want to come in, come on. I'll try to talk to you then. It's sort of like the God thing. But what it really takes is that village coming back, and that village is gone. Because nobody trusts any of the other villagers anymore. And it's really sad. It's definitely sad. Because, you know, you don't know who your neighbor is. I mean, there was once a time, apparently once a time in this country, where you know, you knew who your neighbors was. You were like, you know, Miss Smith from down the street could hit you a couple times and send you to your parents, and then you tell your parents she hit you. Why she hit you? Because I did this. Oh, well, I'm allowed to hit you too. You know what I'm saying? That's not the world that we live in anymore. It's not. And so, like, you know, Miss Smith, she ain't gonna hit your kids because she don't want you to hit her kids. And we're all just like, instead of sitting here having conversations with each other, instead of talking to each other, we're all just in our phones, tweeting and Facebook, and not really worrying about the true community around us.
Okay.
I believe it all starts from.
All right.
Well, I believe it takes a village to raise a child, and if you leave your child with me, you deal with the village. I'm that person that will snap his kid up in the mall, and I did it to this little boy who's running around acting crazy, and I'm telling my mama, go get your mama. Get your daddy, too.
Exactly.
I mean, because it did take a village to raise a child, and you're right. Back in the day, get in trouble on the corner if you wanted to, Ms. Jenkins was going to get you, and then my mama would tear you up when you got home. So, no,
exactly.
I believe it takes a village to raise a child. And even though most of my kids are grown, I tell anybody, you catch one of my kids doing something that's unbecoming, unseemly, snatch a knot in their neck and dare them to call me.
Yeah, that's tough.
And a lot of us nowadays don't necessarily adopt that type of philosophy where before, like you said, it was a village. And I'm not saying in certain instances it's not still today. It's just rarer and fewer and far between.
Of course,
parents do say, not my child. My child didn't. Oh, my child would never do that. Your child out there selling dope on the corner, you don't know what they're doing because you're never home.
Exactly.
And you do run into those parents with that not my child mentality.
They do absolutely exist. But here's a question. I mean, it's general. It's for anybody. Okay, we have identified that, yes, we all go through things and we all have opportunities for great stories because we have an opportunity for a greater comeback. How do you feel that it's best, what is the best way for us to be able to relate this to a broader scale audience, whether it be a more interpersonal level, maybe church, maybe community organizations, perhaps school, mentorship program, all of the above. What's everybody's opinion or take on it?
Okay, I guess I'll go first. Me personally, I believe it's an all of the above type deal. Like, I mean, we live in a time where everything's vying for your attention. Like, at every single moment, there are, like, 15 things that you can help to do at any given time, at any given moment. So it's not only important that, yes, a good message is in there, but at the same token, in order to pull in more people and in order to really, like, start to affect some kind of true change, you need to get people's attention, which is one of the hardest things to get and to keep in society nowadays. And so if you got to go through church, if you got to go through school, if you got to go, like, wherever, and then say we're going to set up a meeting, and at the meeting, like, you know, there's going to be refreshments, there's going to be, like, you know, a bouncy house, there's going to be something there that's not just, you know, so mundane, whereas, you know, you can't keep not just older people's attention, but younger people's attention as well, because without them, then we're going to just continue to keep repeating the same pattern over and over.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is Pastor Rice speaking. I had a detailed conversation with Wanda Moore, who works in the Attorney General's office, and some of you might know her from the Safe Surrender Program. She's one of the founders of that Safe Surrender Program, and she and I had a long conversation. A grant did come out from the Office of Faith Faith through Ed LaForte, where we are recipients of, to mentor the children of the incarcerated parents. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's when I read the RFP, that's kind of what I had hoped God would be able to give us the opportunity to take the children of our client population from parole, probation, drug court, ISP, and then be able to mentor them. Because if you can't read, one statistic says that they start building or forecasting and project budgets to build more prisons. If there's a certain amount of kids that can't read, they fall behind the third grade. So, for instance, if they go into the fifth grade and they're still reading on the third grade level, the sixth grade, and they're still reading on the third and fourth grade level, they just start building more prisons. So one of the things that we have to look at is how to receive the 7,000 guys coming home from Essex County.
I'm sorry, Mom.
The 6,000 guys coming home from the sake. And so on. How do we receive them in our community? And how do we deal with their children? Because the cycle repeats itself. When Administrator Lydell Scheer from Northern State was still the administrator there, I would walk with him through the prisons, and he would point out on numerous occasions a father, an uncle, a grandfather, and a son, or a cousin, a brother, two brothers, and a father. They were all incarcerated at the same time. And so it's not only a family problem, but it's a community problem. And somehow we have to get our minds collaboratively, school, education, drug treatment, prison, probation officers, churches, associations like the NAACP. We have to get our arms around this huge collaboration and come out and brainstorm with the leaders of all of these organizations. You know, Omega, Alpha, you know, all of these think tanks, and create these things so that we come up with a solution. Nobody's got the answer. Nobody's got the one answer. You know what I mean? I mean, I represent now through United Missionary Baptist Convention, I represent 63 churches in their prison ministry. Through North Jersey Baptist, it's about 40 churches that we represent through social justice and things like that. But you need a lot of information. You need a lot of people. We have to change the mind of the community, not just the church, but the community, the politicians, the police, the whole thing, and change this thing into correction, not penal. And how dare we penalize the children of the fatherless children? How do we penalize the fatherless children or the children of the mother who's a crackhead? You know, how do we stomach that and allow that to continue as leaders in our community and allow this to happen? You know, and I'm going to shut it down because y'all know this is my passion. I could talk I can talk the whole 2 hours around this subject. but for instance, I went to numerous occasions, but just last week, a brother who didn't qualify for drug court asked me to go to court with him. He was on federal parole and got shot in the head at 15. The bullet entered into the front and went out the side, and he lived. You see what I'm saying? And he lived. And we went to court, and we were able to get them to reevaluate his probation application, because you have to apply, right? And the federal prosecutor allowed him to stay out because he was in the care of somebody in the community who cared. They don't want to put these guys away all the time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, believe me, there's a money-making machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of jobs and employment with that prison mass incarceration machine. But if we just step up, I mean, if you just go and hold and just stand there next to a brother and say, I got him, Judge, I got him. Wow. 9 times out of 10, they'll say, let him go.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But we don't stand up and say, I got you. It's our community, our
That's
black
right.
community. It's not, you know, we can't look to the white boy and say, we need some help. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? We got to stand up for these young brothers. And when we stand up for them, you'd be surprised the reaction.
Just wait till mommy gets to the phone.
All right, I'm just going to give a benediction now and close out. I'm sent off now.
I would like you to go into something that you had said, and I think for a lot of listeners, this might be helpful. Can you give us the difference between penal and correction?
Okay. All right, and this is my political side. I am a right. So a lot of this war on drugs that started, and I'm sure you guys read Michelle's book, The New Jim Crow. A lot of this started way back with Nixon. Reagan popularized it, and he was able to take the conservative Democratic vote and swing them to vote for him, believe it or not. And then Clinton was able to go back and grab that liberal Republican and bring him to the Democratic side. And the problem was that if you look at South Orange and Newark, if you look at Newark and Montclair, or you look at the suburbs and how close they are to where the action of the drug dealing is, it's easy to attract that person on, quote-unquote, a war against drugs. And so one of the problems that I have is that, you know, while we were saying Clinton was a brother, he was passing all these bills that really diminished the Fourth Amendment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The illegal search and seizures.
Yep.
625,000 illegal search and seizures that happened in New York City.
Hey,
25,000 convictions. You see what I'm saying? That type of stuff. So you get them in jail and prison, and you don't teach them nothing. You just penalize them, and you lock them down for 22 hours. Now, what you going to learn in 22 hours behind a 6x6 cell? You lock down for 22 hours to 23 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, there's no correction there.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I have a CPA of our nonprofit that ended up at Seton Hall University for almost a murder charge in high school, penalized as an adult, but ended up at Seton Hall University. You see what I'm saying? That's correction.
Mm-hmm.
That's correction. He took the test in prison, and some of the priests that were doing some ministry at Seton Hall University looked at his scores, couldn't believe it, and brought him out, got him out, and put him in the university. That's correction.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? There's a huge difference between penal and correction.
Hmm.
Absolutely. I think that is something that needs to be shared, because some people don't understand that there is a very vast difference in keeping somebody basically in an incubator, just having them forest their own thoughts in their own minds in the same manner that got them into this situation in the first place.
Exactly.
And then conditioning someone to be a productive person in society once they do leave this situation. So, I mean, there is a vast difference between one and the other, and thank you for elaborating on that point for us. We have another caller on the line. Brenton Osborne is the president and the CEO and the chairman of the board of the Viola I. Osborne Organization, which is a nonprofit organization. He is on the line. Brent, are you with us tonight?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm with you. What's going on, everybody? Hey, I really wanted to echo a lot of what the pastor had just said in relation to the people, the young men getting incarcerated, not going to corrections pretty much, but more or less going to the penal system, and us not having any system set up to combat what's going on in relation to that. And because of that fact, it's like a revolving door. All we got is brothers that may not have picked up all the information they needed to in grammar school, getting to high school, seeing their only alternative of being drug dealers and hustlers and thinking that that lifestyle is cool, getting put into the penal system and never really having an opportunity to grow and flourish as young men. And along with what the pastor said, there needs to be opportunities in the community for these young men so that they could, instead of taking that path to the left and saying, I want to be a hustler and I want to sell drugs, they could go to the right and say, I want to be a businessman, or creating that opportunity to say, I'm going to college and I want to be a professional. Until we, as the community, create those opportunities for the children, they're going to continue to do exactly what they're doing right now, which is being career criminals. And that's exactly what a lot of them end up doing, not because they want to, but because that is what the environment is creating.
That's why this is why it is imperative that us men and women take back our communities, take back our streets. And there are programs. I know in Virginia, I'm not sure where our listeners are, but in Virginia Beach, the Tidewater area, that's north of Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, Suffolk, we do have programs for that. We have a Joshua Ministry where we minister to people that are incarcerated, and we also have a Second Chances program for those who get out of jail. They come directly to the church, and we work on helping them get their GED and everyday practices to get them acclimated to living in the world and communicating effectively and getting jobs and stuff like that. We walk them through mock interviews and stuff like that to help them feel welcomed, for one, as well as to shift the way that their mindset and everything, because they've been in a penal system, to a mindset that will help them to adapt and to make it within this society. And back to your question earlier, Daryl, yes, all those things do, they do help, but I personally think it starts with us and our actions and the way that we carry ourselves and the way that we respond to our situations. I so often hear people talk about stuff, but they're not being about what it is that they're talking about, which causes the person that they're talking to be like, get out of here with that mess. So if we start practicing, people will see through our actions what it is that we're talking about, so that when we do speak, then it will resonate and they'll see the evidence or the fruits of what it is that we're talking about. So it starts there, and then we can go and mentor and everything like that, because I'm not sure if you all work with children, but children are great at reading, whether you're a phony or whether you're not. We've all experienced times when, whether we're in church or somewhere else, and somebody's talking to us, and we just saw them do the opposite of what they told us. That does not help with anyone or cause anyone to want to listen to what it is that you have to say. So it starts with you. It starts with you practicing what you're preaching, as well as being convicted by the experience of doing what it is that you're preaching, because once you see it for yourself, that allows you to set on fire so that people can see you, because you'll be so willing to share it, because you know through the evidence of you practicing what you preach that it really does work. And that's when passion takes over and allows those people to gravitate towards you, because they can see that you are not just talking about it. You're being about it. You believe in it. And you feel that you can also bring them through it, which is very important that we learn from our life experiences. And that's the whole point of this whole stop being the victim thing. And plus, by the way, I know we talked about, he talked about the situation and the circumstances that may cause the people to go to jail from where they are. That's not an opportunity for you to be the victim, guys. Let's not lose sight of the show and the meaning of the show, where we're talking about, you know, we're more prone to get drugs in our areas and stuff like that. Let's just create the things that will help those transition better and learn better to prevent them from going through the cycle. Yes, and we also need to be cognizant of the fact that jails and the penal system are opportunities for growth. I'm not sure if you said that if the people aren't reading, is it that you said that if they're not reading on the sixth grade level, if they're reading the third grade level by sixth grade, that gives them the opportunity to build jails? Is that what you said?
No. They start, the market research starts going to, because they're privatizing prison. They start then getting ready to build more prisons to put more people in them because they know the population that are illiterate are going to find their way in prison.
So it's based on that illiteracy that they determine whether they can begin to build more prisons?
That's one of the factors.
That's the way that we can fight. That's the way that we can fight and keep that money for ourselves. If we educate our children and prevent them going that route, we save money that could go to the jails and potentially make a way that it can get to us. So that should give us more of a reason to work on building and educating our children before they get to that that mark where they can say, oh, we finally got an opportunity to make more money by building more jails and keeping the people where they are. So if we know all this and we understand all this, that gives us more information that we can use to help us grow and better ourselves. And I think we should take advantage of it as opposed to looking at it in the negative sense. We should try to find the opportunities for growth in it and build upon that. But that's pretty much all I have to say about that. Start with us first. Be convicted by what it is that you're preaching so that you can share in a manner that it's receptive because, like I said, they can spot a phony from a mile away. And go from there and build the relationships and then give them an opportunity. And it's really important that we become successful. I know that's another thing, too. We have to make something of ourselves because the children aren't going to listen to us if we're nobodies trying to tell them how to be somebody. So we really have to make whatever we have working work for us in a manner that they see it as success so that they want to listen to us or want to be like us so that then we'll have a voice that's influential to their ears.
Well said, brother.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just want everybody to know that you're listening to Shadow Worlds Radio. You're listening to the Man Up Show. You still got a half hour left to join into this conversation. The telephone number is 646-478-4507. That's 646-478-4507. Now, everybody's had a chance to chime in on what they feel about the specific topic and stop playing the victim. Brent, I want to give you the opportunity for you just to chime in specifically on what do you feel about the topic of us stop playing the victim. Do you feel that we play the victim card entirely too much, and what should we do about it? So I'm going to give you the floor right now.
I believe the brother from the NAACP was trying to speak of like less than a minute ago. Were you speaking, sir?
I'll make this really quick because I want to give you a chance to speak. But I really like where the brother was just trying to get to, which was, you know, not only do we have to sort of step up as a community, but there are policy issues, and this is where my path. There are policy issues that need to be addressed so that we can, you know, make the positive changes we want to make. If you look at citizen spending versus education spending, especially in areas where there is a high rate of incarceration, that those numbers we have a school to prison pipeline in America, and we need to change that to a school to higher ed pipeline. School to the risk. school to the church pipeline or whatever it has to be, but it needs to break from that school to prison pipeline.
Absolutely.
I feel you on the policy thing. Personally, I work from the mindset of if we don't, or if it's not in our favor to get the policy done, what are we gonna do then? I'd rather work with the harder stuff so that when the policy comes, the transition will be easy. We might get if we put it this way, it's a lot of businesses that are folding now because the economy was so great way back whenever. Okay, there's a lot of businesses that are folding, and now that the economy is down, it's exposing the businesses for their true business savvy, which is causing them to fold. And I say that to say this: if we get the policies, and we still have the poor education scores and the terrible reading and stuff, mm-hmm. the policies mean absolutely nothing.
That's
so
right.
We need to work on mm-hmm. us first, and then when the policies come into place, everything else will fall into place. Let's work on the worst-case scenario, which I personally think is the minds of our people. Because the policy, if we focus on the policies, we stop focusing on what the true problem is, which is our mindsets and shifting those to build us, and we can start creating things that will cause the policies not even to matter. Because we've taken back our communities, we've taken back our children, we've taken back our minds, and we have just changed the game. And then they have to listen to us because we are so powerful in our mindsets and our thoughts. I can't stress us figuring out and understanding who we are and who we are part of and who we come from. And if we can just understand that small yet humongous thing, we will be such a wonderful people, making so many differences and changes in the world that we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves. So I feel you on the policies, but if the policies come out and we get the policies through and then everything is still the same, that makes us look worse. Let's take care of what we can take care of and worry about the other stuff later.
Absolutely, Eddie. You said a mouthful on that one, my brother. We have to be proactive. I mean, I think that things have to happen on a multitude of levels, and everybody's strong suit is different. Eddie's is different from mine. Naz's is different from Eddie's. Hassan's is different from all of ours. Tom's is different than Pastor Rice's, which is different from Oz. That's different from Sig's, on and on and on. Everybody has different strengths. But the beautiful thing is when we're inclusive and we bring everything that we have
together
to the table,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, to like this forum that we have here on this show, when we bring
right.
everything to the table, I got what I got, you got what you got, and we put it together and we make jambalaya. It becomes a relatively
pop
good
up.
Dish.
Nice pop
exactly.
up. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. That's it. So we have to be able to, you know, look past our differences, but accept that those differences that separate us really doesn't separate us, but actually it gives us a larger
sure. mm-hmm.
extension. It makes us
mm-hmm.
grander. It makes us broader than what we would be otherwise if we were just left to our own devices.
Hmm.
So we can collaborate on a great many things based upon the fact that our strengths are different.
Yeah.
You know, where, okay, I might not be the strongest in something. I'm pretty sure that the rest of you could pick up that slack. And then there's some things that where maybe some of you are not necessarily as adept to it as I am. So for what mm-hmm. I can apply this in order to make it better. We are so much stronger as a unit than we ever can be as individuals.
That's right. That's right.
God made us in the first place for us to be interdependent first upon him and then beholden to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Am I my brother's keeper? Is he my keeper? Yeah, we are. We all are beholden, whether it's as elders to younger children or even to be able to do for the seasoned saints who have already done for us in the past. Now it's our time to reciprocate. Or it's brother to brother. You know, you ain't got to take this bail by yourself. If I grab one end and you grab the other, we can make this load a lot lighter as we go up this hill together.
That's right.
So we have to be able to understand that, accept that, and embrace that. I think sometimes as black men, we have a tendency to feel, you know, I don't need nobody. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
I got this sometimes is the worst word in the world that you can use. When, you know, really say, you know, bruh, to be perfectly frank, if you help me do this, I can get this done a lot quicker and we can move on to something different. You know, I mean, your aid in this would help immensely. Thank you. You know, the key word instead of saying, "is I got this," is to say thank you. Just say thank you. That's all it is to it. You
and
know,
the biggest, and the biggest thing we need to get to, the biggest place we need to get to is not that I did it, but it got done. People so badly want to be in the forefront of what happened that they miss out on the opportunity to get it done. So we got to get out of that mindset of it was me. It was me that did it. No, he didn't give me my credit. He didn't give my props. It got done. We just need to focus on getting it done.
Say that one more time, man, just in case somebody missed it.
We keep stressing. We keep stressing and wanting to be the one that did it, that we miss out on the opportunity to get it done. We should be stressing about getting it done as opposed to being the one that got it done. You could be the help in it. You don't have to be the one that they said, hey, it was Eddie that did it. Just be a part of it. Know that you're a part of it. Be satisfied with it, but make sure it gets done. If it takes a whole bunch of people to do it, so be it. Stop stressing about being the one to do it and make sure it gets done however it needs to get done.
Absolutely.
But we want to be the one that gets the credit. We want the pat on the back. It was me. I was the hero. I could finally wear my Superman shirt. No, just get it done. I don't care how it gets done. Get it done.
You know, put the underdrews back in the drawer. Let's keep it moving. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that, yes, that is pretty much an accurate depiction as it exists that, you know, we can just go ahead, you know, there's no big eyes, no small U's. Let's just roll up our sleeves and get the job done because it's getting darker out here.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
The more that we seem to have is the more that we seem to have already lost. Where you can find a homeless man on the corner with a cell phone. Literally, you know, technology is abounding all over the place. But we have lost so much spiritually as in a sense of community, as in a sense of belonging, duty, obligation, not only to, you know, forget ourselves as individuals, but to each other as brothers, to our families, whether it be our wives, whether it be our children, whether it be our parents, whether it be our extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins, et cetera, or even just that sense of community where, you know, when you were a kid and you went outside and played, not only did you know all your friends, but you knew your friends' parents, and they knew you, and they knew your parents. Everybody was interconnected. It was a neighborhood. You know, that's what we grew up into. Somewhere in between MTV and Sega Genesis, we lost all that. I'm not certain where exactly, but it was somewhere up in there. Totally right. Where, you know, it became the Not My Child era. It became the, you know, I mean, even back in the day, we had what happened in this house stays in this house. We had that. But we also had a sense of there is a sense of pride. There is a sense of duty. How many of you ever heard the term, you understand when you leave this house, they ain't looking at you. They looking
at me. That's right.
You know, you ain't representing you. Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
You know. You
right.
are such and such as child. You are such and such as grandchild. That's how they know who you are. You are an extension of us. That being the case, there's a certain level of pride that you need to carry yourself with. There has to be a certain walk, a certain talk, a certain attitude, a certain way that you carry yourself that distinctly separates you from other people based upon who you come from. Have you ever heard that term, hey, boy, who are your folks? Who are your people? You know, they don't ask just who are you, but who are your people? Who do you come from? And now sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. You ain't never wanted to be a bad thing, but you wanted it to be from the point of you carried yourself in such a manner that your people would be proud of you if they knew how you were carrying yourself in the situation. Which goes back to the topic of our show, which is stop playing the victim. I'm going to give everybody a minute or so to wrap up their thoughts on it. I think I'll start with Tom, and I'll work my way from there. So, Tom, to give us your closing thoughts on this topic.
You know, I just want to jump back. When I said the policy issue, I didn't mean that that's in place of. You know, we do have to take care of things as a community. We do have to make sure that each one of us is making sure that no one's left behind. That we, you know, raise our kids. That we mentor those who need it. And that, you know, we do our part to make sure that when somebody's done what they're supposed to do, you know, whether it's they've graduated school or they served their time, whatever it is, that we are there to help them, to support them, to be there for them, to help mentor them, and to, you know, be a voice for them when needed to be. I think that along with that, we need to attack the policy issues. And I guess my role with the NHB is where I get that from, and not being a parent and being, you know, relatively young, I very much am all about you know, getting results done. And I just, you know, I'm just really glad that, again, I could be on the line with such powerful speakers, such powerful men, and
wow,
that we can have these conversations.
Thank you all. Absolutely. Thank you very, very, very much, Tom. Oz, quick minute, wrap up exactly your thoughts on this and on this topic.
Basically, the way I see this is we just have to formulate our plan and attack it. We already know that, you know, we're put in a position to straight up fail, but we can't just lay down and take the position. We as black men in the community have to utilize what's there, and if it's not there, create it for our black youth that are coming up, especially the men, and then put them in a position to succeed. Where if it's creating mentoring programs, create it. If we have to put money together and you pull our resources to do it, to create a program that will take care of them, just do it. All it takes is somebody say, hey, we need this program. This program can be the prototype that carries throughout the United States that starts to reverse much of what you all talked about in relation to our kids getting targeted and sent to jail and projected because they can't, by the time they get to sixth grade and so on and so forth, we know that they can't read and they build the jails. So if we take the time and look at what's going on and be proactive instead of reactive, this subject goes away, regardless of the economy or economics or anything. We just have to do it. That's it.
Okay. Way to go there, Oz. Way to go. Pastor Rice, can you share a word with us?
I think that this was a tremendous talk forum. I would like to get a tape or maybe some numbers of some of the people on the panel. We do men's breakfast in the month of August on Saturday morning. We call it Black Brothers Leading African American Communities and Churches. And I would like to continue this type of forum in the community where our churches and where we live. and bring in more views like this. I really was very impressed by Brent Osborne, who I think I know, but I'm not sure. But you know, some of the things, and Tom, I know, and I was just I'm just glad that you invited me on, and I had a meeting at 7:30. I just couldn't get out my driveway. I'm sitting in my car right now.
Oh, wow.
Told me go ahead and text it. You gotta go. We understand. I kept trying to text, but and then you know, then you put Osborne on the phone. And there goes my text. You know. I was just I'm just sitting here, watered in the eyes, really touched, man. Very
just
us being on the battlefield, man. And, you know. We need more of us on the battlefield, and that's, you know, that's it.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor. Thank you very, very much. Signature, darling. Sig, what you got to say, sweetie?
You guys are great. I'm glad it's a man up talk show because y'all always say men and little boys. They're women and little girls. I want to say this, and I say that because I'm very passionate not to exclude anybody.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Everything you guys said about what needs to be done, that's fine. Let's go back to what James said. He's right. A lot of people don't know their neighbors. First challenge, go out and meet your neighbors. Say hello. Hang out with them. And if you think that that won't work, let me tell you, I'm new to a neighborhood. I don't have any small kids. My granddaughter that I adopted apparently comes over. I take her outside. We stay outside for a couple of hours. Lately, more and more parents, grandparents, and their kids are coming out to talk. So you can start right there. Start at home first. Still do what you're doing in your community, but get to know your neighbors. Learn their names. Make it a community thing. Girl, if you don't stop, make it a community thing. Y'all have no idea what my new mini-me is doing to me. Make it a community thing and go from there and still support everything. And anybody that's listening, all those programs that they're talking about, it is my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that those programs are available in just about every city or near every small town. If you are in an area and you cannot find a program to support whatever it is you need support for, hit up the Man Up Talk Show on Facebook, give us the city, and I will find your organization.
We will find it. We will find it. That's right.
Absolutely. Yes, we will.
Better believe
that's
it.
Anybody want to adopt a kid? She's not mine to put up for adoption. She worked to me.
One of our future topics is adoption. We'll just put the child on the black market on the radio. Half auction. That's how
my
we get down
would
here.
Kill
that's
me.
How we get there.
Sweetie, I'm joking. I would never get rid of you.
She would never get done unless I started saying that. Oh Lord. Okay. Naz, what do you feel about this? Wrap up your thoughts for this evening, for this broadcast.
All I can say, you know, I as I'm sitting there listening to the whole dialogue, I'm writing down notes. I'm already looking at the next game plan to take us to the next level. I'm fully prepared now to start a database on getting that information together where people can reach out in various states. It's going to take a task, but you know what? I'm on it right now. I'm helping my brothers right here. We're going to build this network up, and I'm my brother Eddie and the pastors and all the gentlemen. I'm pretty prepared to now put this network together and let's just get it done. That's it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Edward.
First of all, is the brother's name from NAACP, is it Tom?
Yes.
Is that your name?
Yeah, Tom.
Tom, I would like to first and foremost commend you on manning up on the Man Up show. That was absolutely wonderful how I'm glad you didn't take
offenses to what I said. I definitely wanted, first of all, policies are very important. I'm glad you were receptive to that. And we need people like you to work on the policies because I'm not going to worry about them. And I definitely need people like you who understand them and work them to take care of them. I'm so glad that you didn't take offense to what I said and you just embraced what I said as something that can work with what you're doing to make for a better community and better people. That just shows your character and, forget the whole age thing and you having children. What you just did is very impressive, and I'm impressed by you for it. So I want to start with that. also, I wanted to say, yes, we do have a lot of work to do and helping people to understand that about not playing the victim. But I do want to stress to you that I also see Caucasian children that are going through the same problems, that are living in the same ghettos or what have you. And this is the man up. It's not the black men up. It's the man up. Right. And if those people are going through the same issues, I'm here. I'm an advocate for all people and helping all people. And if we can get those people that are going through that aren't the same color as us, they will in turn become whoever they're going to become, and they'll reach out to us just as well. So it will work if we just do it all together. I'm not in for exclusion. I'm all in for just the people. So I represent the people. If you are ignorant and I can help you, I'm going to be there, and I can help you build and make you better. That's what I'm about. And like I said, playing the victim ruins your opportunity to learn and grow. And if you don't learn and grow, you're going to continue to take the same steps, and you won't have the opportunity to help somebody if you pass the test. Had you passed the test when they encounter the same things that you're going through or you've been through, all you have to do is say, man, I'm the same place that you've been, as opposed to I've been there and this is what I did to get you out, so come on and follow me. So it's imperative that we learn from the things that we go through and realize that they are more than likely tests or situations or opportunities, like this brother who has wrote a book who has been saving lives, to take someone out of what you've been through, because you were the perfect person to go through it so that you can relate to someone that's going to go through it and take them out of the same thing. And that's it.
Amen. Great show.
Well, gentlemen, it looks like we've put another one in the bag. It's been an absolute great show. You have listened to Shadow Worlds Radio Network's Man Up Talk Show, and we surely did Man Up once again this evening. We would like to thank our guest, Tom Reynolds from the Montclair NAACP, Pastor John Rice of the Love Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church of Orange, New Jersey. We would like to thank Brenton Osborne of the Loyola I. Osborne Organization. We would like to thank James. We would like to thank Sid. We would like to thank everybody who listened this evening. We would like to thank our crew, of course, Mr. Naz, Eddie, Hassan, who is on the grind doing what he does. I'd like to make a special announcement that next week we're doing another good investigative show on the Howard Morgan case. If you follow us on Facebook, we have gone into an issue of a brother by the name of Howard Morgan, who is a police officer from Chicago, Illinois, who was shot 28 times by four Caucasian police officers from the Chicago Police Department. Not only, you know, praise God that Brother Howard Morgan lived, but he was sentenced for attempted murder of four of those police officers. So we have his wife, Rosalind Morgan, on with us, plus some brothers from the Chicago area to from the NAACP and other organizations, along with inviting back our cast to be able to go over these issues. Once again, we thank you very much for your support, and we can't wait to see you next week. Naz, Eddie, anything else we got to say before we say goodnight?
No, it's been beautiful. Just tune in next week in the Man Up Show, and we keep doing what we're doing.
Check the archives, man. This stuff you can't just learn to keep moving, man. You got to repeat it so it can grow in you. Check the archives, man. Learn from what we're teaching and grow from it so that you can adopt it and potentially grow and be a better person because of it.
Well, that's the message for this week. We thank everybody for tuning in. We love y'all. Thank you for listening to the Man Up Show. Until next week, this is Big Dude Down Hanger signing off. Until next week, God bless and take care.
Play back.
Love y'all, man. Peace.
Good night.
What you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black man's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want, gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech and freedom of death. We got to fight the power that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Radio.